Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Roland Martin next on News One Now. Donald Trump's fraudulent Committee on Election Integrity meets for the first time in public as opposition to its agenda continues to grow. We'll talk with Congresswoman Terry Sewell, who's fighting back as a vice chair of a new commission called Protecting American Democracy from the Trump Administration. Breaking news as President Donald Trump gives an explosive interview to the New York Times where he attacks his own Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. Really, dude? Really? Citing recusal, Trump said he wouldn't have hired Sessions. We'll talk about that, of course, with our panel. Also, what the hell is going on with Republican senators and President Trump over health care? They had a meeting yesterday where he even went after one of his own Republican senators from Nevada. Not smart, especially with an election next year. Also breaking news, Senator John McCain has been diagnosed with brain cancer. We'll have the details on that as well. Also, the Department of Justice, that's right, speaking of Jeff Sessions, they pretty much are saying it's okay for police to seize assets. Really? Really? I guess he doesn't care about the rule of law or regular citizens. Also on today's show, former federal prosecutor Paul Butler joined us to talk about his new book, Chokehold, Policing Black Men, an explosive look at how the criminal justice system impacts the lives of African-American boys and men. And more drama surrounding R. Kelly. This time he's accused of running an abusive cult. Really? Plus, we'll talk to the stars of the hilarious movie, Girls Trip, part one of my interview with Regina Hall, Jada Pinkett Smith, Tammy Haddish, as well as Queen Latifah. Time to bring the funk. News One Now, TV One. Trump's Election Integrity Commission met for the first time yesterday, 2 months after it was created through an executive order to supposedly root out voting irregularities around the country. All it's done is tick off various secretaries of state across the country. Members of the commission, chaired by Vice President Mike Pence, heard from the president at their inaugural gathering. He explained the commission's importance.
This issue is very important to me because throughout the campaign and even after it, people would come up to me and express their concerns about voter inconsistencies and irregularities, which they saw. In some cases, having to do with very large numbers of people in certain states.
Okay, people will come up to him. Talk about a flat-out lie. There is absolutely zero evidence of any widespread irregularities occurring in the 2016 presidential election. Trump also questioned the motives of states, guess what, all of them, who refused to cooperate with the commission's demands for sensitive voter information.
If any state does not want to share this information, one has to wonder what they're worried about. And I asked the vice president, I asked the commission, what are they worried about? There's something. There always is.
Yeah, probably what they're worried about is private information. Outside the White House grounds where the commission was meeting, protesters called for it to be shut down, and the Democratic National Committee is fighting back with its own commission comprised of lawmakers and state and local officials to combat Trump's commission.
We understand, we hear this nonsensical myth of voter fraud. It is not happening. We are not seeing that. But what we are seeing is that people need to have more opportunities to have a chance to go vote, and we are committed to that here at the DNC.
We do not want our sensitive personal information in the hands of Trump and anybody whose purpose is to dismantle voting rights in America.
All right, let's talk about this with Democratic Congresswoman Terry Sewell of Alabama, who is the vice chair of the Commission on Protecting American Democracy from the Trump Administration. Okay, you hear the president there, straight lying. Oh, people came up to me. Really? Dude, that's the best you got? And then say you wonder why states aren't turning over information. Here's what's crazy. The guy who is the vice chair of his own committee, who's the Secretary of State in Kansas, he wouldn't turn over information from Kansas.
I know. What gives? Well, listen, Roland, you know, to me, this Trump sham commission is just made up of folks who have had a history of voter suppression. Kobach, who you mentioned, who was the Kansas Secretary of State, spent tons of taxpayer money to try to undercover fraud. And out of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who voted in Kansas, they could only find 9 cases. And those cases, only half of them were turned out to be the kind of voter fraud that we were talking about. So, look, I think it's really important. No one really trusts this administration with facts. And so I think it's very important that our commission, our shadow commission at the DNC, is really here to protect voter integrity, as well as to make sure that we're not actually attacking Americans. We should be attacking Russians and not attacking Americans. I mean, that's exactly what this commission is doing.
And again, he lied yesterday. He has said 3 to 5 million people voted illegally. In fact, he also lied when he claimed people were traveling across state lines in New Hampshire to vote. Republicans in New Hampshire said that's a lie. Corey Lewandowski, who was his campaign chair, who is from New Hampshire, said there's no truth to that. The man lies even in Republican states.
I know. Well, 3 to 5 million illegals voted. Didn't you know that? I mean, this whole commission is a sham. And I think that we, as really concerned citizens, have to be looking at making sure that we don't have voter suppression and not voter fraud. The issue really is voter suppression. You and I both know that since the Shelby decision, 33 states have imposed voter ID laws. So while we don't have to count how many marbles are in a jar, this is modern day barriers to voting, and we shouldn't stand for it.
Well, so the DNC committee, last question for you, what exactly are they going to do?
So our job really is to be the shadow commission. So to the extent that their first meeting was yesterday, we had our first meeting yesterday. We're really here to call out the lies, call out all of the inconsistencies that this commission will be doing. You know, it's not as if election integrity is not important. You know, I sit on the House Intelligence Committee, and we can be doing something as an administration. They could be looking into Russia's interference. We know that it's going to happen again, and we also know that our election infrastructure is sorely in need of help. I mean, cybersecurity is what we should be working on and not on voter fraud.
All right, Congresswoman Tara Sewell, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, folks, again, this is an issue that we have been covering for quite some time on this show and will continue to cover. I referenced this earlier this week. I want to bring up this story here. Shelley, go to my iPad. All right. This is a ProPublica story. This is a ProPublica story that they ran on July 3rd. A Wisconsin Republican looks back with regret at voter ID and redistricting fights. This guy served for 30 years in the Wisconsin legislature. Dan Schultz, Republican, 1983 to 2015. In this story, he lays out that he initially voted for it. He then said, the point blank, that when he was in Republican caucuses, he said he specifically asked his Republican members, give him concrete examples of voter legal voting. They couldn't. In fact, he then put a team of former journalists and staffers in his office on this. Do you know what happened? They found 2 examples. Both involved Republicans. That was Wisconsin. Let's go to our panel and let's talk about this right now. Joining us right now, Republican Kim Klasick, of course, a contributor with politicalchicks.com. Also to my left, we have Ralph Chittums, who joins us also as well, of course, Jameera Burley and Joel Payne as well, Democratic strategist, Jameera, human rights activist. Okay, so Ralph, again, explain this. You got this fraudulent commission. It's a joke. You have Republicans who are saying we can't find voter fraud. Republicans. The Republican Lawyers Association 2 years ago did this extensive examination and barely found any. This is a joke.
Hey, this commission is probably not going to find what we would call systemic voter fraud, voter abuse, and things of that nature.
So why are we wasting our time and money?
What they will find, though, however, are cracks and loopholes in the voting systems in the different states, which allow individuals to break the law. Because we have seen, as you said, and I'm not being partisan here, I'm saying Democrats and Republicans, individuals have found ways because of cracks and loopholes in the voting laws to vote in multiple states. We have had one person who was an illegal prosecuted for voting multiple times. So while this commission may not find widespread, systemic, systematic voter abuse, what they will find are cracks and holes in the system, which then the states can go back and fix.
Kim, you're a Republican. Trump talks about people being registered in two states. How about he look in his own family? How about look at Steve Bannon? He has examples, people who are working for him who registered in two states.
I can't speak on that because I honestly don't know if that
Steve
is true.
Steve Bannon is, no, you can go ahead. I'll pull it up for you. But Steve Bannon is registered in two states.
Okay.
His own political advisor.
Well, he made a mistake, I guess. I don't know. I can't speak for Steve Bannon. But what I can say is you're right. There are loopholes and there are people that are voting in more than one state. And we have to actually take a look at that. I mean, I would think that Democrats would be for this as well.
No. First of all, anybody with common sense will not be for a fraudulent commission that is based on a lie. Based on a flat-out lie, and that's what this is. It's a lie. I mean, he said 3 to 5 million voted illegally. He has no evidence. He creates a commission to try to go find the evidence. Joe, that's nuts.
They have operationalized what they've been doing really for the last decade, and they being the conservative movement in this country, which is really trying to suppress primarily Democratic, primarily minority votes around the country. Notice the places that the president brings up when he talks about this. He talks about Philadelphia. He talks about Chicago. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I wonder what he's talking about there. So this is a president who has finally decided to take voter suppression big league, tried to put a White House seal on it, and tried to make it official.
Jamira, Washington Post, January 25th. Shelley, go to my iPad, please. Headline, Steve Bannon was registered to vote in two states despite his efforts to take himself off the rolls in Florida. It says he cast an absentee ballot in New York on October 14th, 2016. Oh, but he was still registered in Sarasota, Florida, Jamira, on August 25th.
No, I've said it before and I'll say it again. This party is a clear-cut, constant contradiction of itself. A lot of the activities that they talk about that are illegal are actually festering within their own party, if not within the White House. I think what's interesting that the president is asking for data from states for an integrity commission, but yet he's asking state legislators to break the law and go against their own statute to provide data and information that's only going to be used to hurt voters in the long run.
I want to talk about this New York Times story that dropped off on, of course, yesterday. Talk about stunning. In this interview, Donald Trump attacks his own Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. Some of this was also recorded. Trump said that he never would have appointed Sessions had he known that Sessions would recuse himself from overseeing the Russian investigation that has dogged his presidency, calling the decision unfair, very unfair to the president. Trump complained that Sessions' decision ultimately led to the appointment of special counsel Robert Mueller, and that should not have happened. Trump said, quote, if he was going to recuse himself, he should have told me before he took the job and I would have picked someone else. Trump also accused former FBI Director James Comey of trying to leverage a dossier of compromising material to keep his job. He also criticized acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. Trump then goes after Robert Mueller, who's now leading the investigation, saying, warning him that if Mueller looks too closely to his family's finances, yeah, he's going to be crossing a red line.
This is y'all president.
Dude, what, really?
What's your question?
Really? This is the guy who's president? So he attacks the acting FBI director, the deputy attorney general, acting FBI director, the deputy attorney general, he attacks a special counsel, the former FBI director. Now the man's trashed his own attorney general. Ain't no way in hell I want to work for somebody like that. Would you?
That's a good question.
But yes, okay. Or no? Would you work for somebody like that?
I would take a job in this administration, yes.
I mean, that says more about him than it does about Trump.
But also, on a personal note, I never understood exactly why Sessions recused himself.
Because he lied about the Russian meetings before the committee, and that's a part of the investigation. If the special counsel is investigating whether there was Russian collusion, and you met multiple times with the Russian ambassador and didn't reveal all of those meetings,
Yeah, you probably want to recuse yourself.
Well, the one meeting that they're talking about that he had wasn't a meeting. He met a guy at a cocktail party. They exchanged a few pleasantries. That's not a meeting.
I have to sit here and cape up for Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions has more sense of what is appropriate. He's been a senator for 30 years. He knew that this stunk, and that's why he recused himself. Jeff Sessions would not have recused himself if he didn't know he was in some real trouble. So it's the president the one that has the problem, not
right.
Jeff Sessions.
Kim, this president simply does not like people who actually have integrity because he has none.
That's not true.
He has no integrity. He has no integrity.
That is not true.
It is very true. This guy, flat out, even when he had his own national security advisor, Mike Flynn, who lied about meeting with the Russians, who did not disclose taking $500,000 from Turkey, he still run around, I shouldn't have got rid of him. This guy likes people who have no integrity, no morals, no values.
That's not true. Okay, let's think about this for a fact. So he has said some things off the mic that he shouldn't probably.
Off the mic, this was recorded. This was an interview with the New York Times that was on the record. They actually have audio. The audio is on their website. You can go read the entire transcript. It wasn't off mic.
Yeah, what are you defending? I don't understand that. Why is it so hard to hold this president accountable?
I'm not saying that. Well, first of all, I'm not going to speak for the president because I'm not the president.
No, we're asking to speak for you.
He's barely the president.
What's that?
He's barely the president.
He is the president.
He doesn't act like a president.
I understand. Look, you lost. I'm sorry.
No. First of all, I wasn't running, so I didn't lose.
No, but you can't have
he doesn't act like a president.
You can't have a president who says that something is wrong with the election, that 3 million illegal people voted, and then say that his presidency is legitimate. Like, you can't have those two ideologies.
It happens to be 3 million, which happens to be the amount of the popular vote that he lost.
And in fact,
happens to be 3 to 5.
And in fact, yesterday, even Chris Kobach said, we aren't sure that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. Then he said, well, we also aren't sure Trump won. What the hell?
Well, I mean, that can be said for any election. We could go back to Gore Bush and make that statement.
Trump
Clinton, that statement that was made is true for every election that's occurred in this country.
I think we're pretty clear about the previous elections. At the end of the day, this guy is nuts. And if you work for him, it is abundantly clear he will throw you under the bus. Quick, fast, in a hurry.
He threw his own son under the bus the other day.
In a hurry. He'll do it. All right, y'all. We come back. We're going to talk about civil asset forfeiture. Speaking of Jeff Sessions, he's saying, guess what, cops? Run amok. Snatch up as much stuff as you can. That's up next on the show. Plus, we'll also have talked to Paul Butler about his book, Chokehold, Policing Black Men. Of course, he'll join us in studio as well. 17 after the hour, News 1 Now, TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
Post breaking news, Senator John McCain of Arizona has brain cancer. The 80-year-old has a tumor that can be treated with chemotherapy and radiation, but medical experts said it almost always grows back because of his type of tumor is particularly aggressive. McCain learned of the tumor after undergoing surgery last week to remove a blood clot above his left eye. McCain's office says he is recuperating at his home in Arizona, that he appreciates the outpouring of support. Also, this is the same type of brain cancer that Senator Ted Kennedy had, and it is a very aggressive form of brain cancer that literally will lead to someone losing their life in a matter of months. So certainly prayers go out to Senator John McCain and his family. Yesterday, speaking of Republican senators, President Donald Trump brought them to the White House for a luncheon and pretty much blasted them, saying no one gets a summer recess until they pass a bill that repeals and replaces the Affordable Care Act.
We have to stay here. We shouldn't leave town. And we should hammer this out and get it done. And not just a repeal. Hey, it was sort of early on, along with a few of the other folks at the table. The repeal was fine. But we ought to get more than a repeal. I think the people of this country need more than a repeal. They need a repeal and a replace.
Really? These words came from the man who just 2 days ago disowned the failed Republican Senate health care bill.
Let
Obamacare fail, it'll be a lot easier. And I think we're probably in that position where we'll just let Obamacare fail. We're not going to own it. I'm not going to own it. I can tell you the Republicans are not going to own it.
All right, folks, so let's get right to it. So they had this whole deal. Now, all of a sudden, the president wakes up. Because remember, the day the bill died, he was playing with a fire truck on the lawn of the White House. And, of course, over the weekend, he was playing around at his golf course. You would think that if you were president, you actually cared about the bill, you would have spent time actually working to get it passed. But instead, we have a part-time president.
Okay. First, the Republicans in the Congress have been lying to Republican voters and to the American public for the last 6 years. They have said they wanted a repeal and replace. They went through how many votes, Roland? 63?
50 plus, yeah.
60 plus votes. They even voted a full repeal out of the House and the Senate, sent it to the White House for President Obama's signature, knowing full well he was going to veto it. President Trump tells them, you send the same bill to me, the exact same bill, and I will sign it. And those lying liars in the House and in the Senate refused to send the same bill to the president that they had voted for 2 years ago. This is the fault of the Republicans in Congress, and every last one of them who has lied to the American people should be primaried and voted out of office.
No, they shouldn't, actually, because I think what the Republican Party is realizing that their constituencies actually benefit from the Obamacare Act and actually want it to continue to stay. And so it's easy for people to say repeal and replace it or just repeal it altogether. If you are going to take 30, now they're saying 3 dozen million people off Obamacare and won't have access to health care. So I think they're actually getting a little bit smarter and realizing that elections are right around the corner and they can't afford for people to be sick, poor, in America who are going to go and vote against them.
Kim, but that 3 dozen or that 22 or 32 million that they keep talking about, most of that number is people who are going to drop insurance because they no longer have to pay that penalty, that a tax that's imposed by Obama.
Kim, the Congressional Budget Office said 32 million people, if they simply repeal, will not have health care. This is Republicans feeling the pressure of their constituents, their own constituents, not Democrats. A bunch of broke, sick, largely white Republicans.
Yeah, I can't defend this at all. Obviously, the Republicans, they have been lying. They know that, like you said, the election's around the corner and they want to be reelected. And so now they're, you know, saying,
you can't defend what? Their no vote? Or you can't defend the deal?
The fact that they're not getting this done and the fact that they're not voting for it. In 2015, they voted for a bill. They did. Now they're coming back and they're saying, oh, we don't like it. We don't want it. Why? Because your constituents are saying they don't like it. You want their vote. Mm-hmm. I mean, so basically this is politics and here we are stuck in the middle of it.
No, Joel, this is called reality. What the reality is, many of these Republican voters for these senators are dumb. They're dumb, dumb, dumb. They are dumb. They say, I don't want Obamacare because Obama's name is on it, but they like the Affordable Care Act. It's the same thing. I'm going to call dumb, dumb. And guess what? They ran up against reality when they said, oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Are you telling me I'm going to actually lose the Affordable Care Act? Not that Obamacare thing? Yeah, I think I'm good. I want to keep it.
The point here, too, is, and I think you made the right point earlier, it has now come home to roost in terms of the types of folks that this is impacting. Medicaid is not just an old folks thing or black folks thing or whatever. Well, it is an old folks thing, but it's old white and black folks. Mm-hmm. And it's people not just from the cities, but it's also people from Appalachia and from underrepresented rural communities as well. So the chickens have really come home to roost. And I'm glad that they are finally stepping up and realizing not only is it bad politics, but it's bad policy as well.
Speaking of bad policy, the Justice Department is resuming a controversial practice that allows law enforcement to take and keep your assets. Under what is known as civil asset forfeiture, police can confiscate anything from homes and other buildings to cars and cash from individuals, even if they have not been convicted or even charged with a crime. Civil liberties groups, as well as libertarians, say police departments have abused the practice in order to expand their budgets. Mm-hmm. In 2015, the Obama administration ended an aspect of civil asset forfeiture that allowed local law enforcement agencies to evade more stringent state laws on forfeiture by turning over seized property to the feds, only to have the government return most of the proceeds from those seizures to police departments. announcing the reboot of asset forfeiture. Attorney General Jeff Sessions said the program is necessary to fight drug dealers and other criminal organizations. This, again, is idiotic. You have the Koch brothers, libertarians, and others who are saying this is wrong. You've got civil rights organizations saying this is wrong. This is nothing more than a money grab. But here's the deal. When Trump met with the law enforcement organizations at the outset of his presidency, this was the first thing they brought up because they want to keep the spigot flowing.
Absolutely. This is, in my opinion, a violation of illegal search and seizure on the United States Constitution. How can somebody who's traveling mm-hmm. on a train, for example, there was a young man who was traveling, I think he was on a train, had close to $10,000.
Oh, he was in a car. He was going to buy a car?
No, there was one who was going to open a business.
Hell, it's a bunch of them. It's a bunch of them.
So here's a Republican saying that civil asset forfeiture is a violation of the Constitution. It's a violation of illegal search and seizure. Now, if somebody is stopped and they have drugs and you arrest them and they're prosecuted, take their house, take their car, take their dreams, take whatever you want from them. But if it's an individual
robbery.
Who's just traveling and the police can just come and take your stuff, that's wrong.
Yeah.
This is the epitome of big government. And as far as I know, Republicans are against large government. Mm-hmm. So for him to even put this forth is a step not just backwards for everyone, but extremely for the Republican Party.
But hold up. But Republicans keep supporting it.
I don't know anyone supporting
no,
it.
No, the states
aren't. Yes, they are. Republican states are supporting it. What are you talking about?
I have not read anyone that's actually supporting this.
I actually read that there were 25 states that pushed back against them. Many of them were Republican states that are saying they don't support.
Okay, first of all here, is Donald Trump a Republican?
Everybody knows
is
that.
Is Donald Trump a Republican?
But he's not listening to his base.
Is Donald Trump a Republican?
That is true.
Is Donald Trump your Republican president?
Yes, he is.
Is Attorney General Jeff Sessions, was he a 30-year United States senator? Is he now the Attorney General?
Yes,
he is. Is he supporting it?
Yes.
So, if all these Republicans are against it, then when are they coming out to blast Jeff Sessions and say, do not do this?
Daryl Issa from California came out to blast him. I believe.
That's two.
I don't know all.
Keep going.
We could go down the list.
There should be a list. Of course, if Republicans are against this, and if this is wrong, I'm sorry, I need to see mass action. In fact, if they are wrong, I need to see the Republican House and the Republican Senate pass a bill overruling Jeff Sessions.
They should.
I am not going to allow Republicans to slip away and say that they don't support this, because this is just a reflection of the totalitarian regime that Donald Trump is running. This is what he wants to do. He is mimicking what he's seen from strong men across the world, and this is a reflection of it. He believes that this is presidential style leadership, and it's not.
It's breaking the law. It's really breaking the law. They said that in 2015, police seized more property than robberies across the country.
Right.
Millions of dollars went into the coffee pockets of police forces around the country, and they used it for things like popcorn machines
right.
and like additional bonuses and parties that they hosted at the police station. So it's really a slap in the face, and it's
Got
really
it.
Stake sanction
and
robbery.
And if you don't want to end civil asset forfeiture, don't let the local police jurisdictions maintain the ability to retain the funds that they seize.
Again, I want to see the Republicans in Congress come out. Yeah, I want to see the whole list, and I want to see those Republican governors and state lawmakers do the same. I'll wait. Coming up next, we'll chat with Paul Butler, Georgetown law professor, former federal prosecutor, about his new book, Chokehold, Policing Black Men. Also on the show, R. Kelly is vehemently denying allegations that he is holding six women in two of his homes in an abusive cult. All that next, News 1 Now on TV1.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
Folks, the criminal justice system is functioning exactly the way it was intended, according to former federal prosecutor Paul Butler, where black males are always under watch and are treated unfairly by police while politicians and judges are complicit. That is the premise of Butler's new book, Chokehold, Policing Black Men, which will surely add to the national debate on policing, criminal justice, and race relations. Paul joins us right now. So, Paul, why do you say this has always been the case? This is what it was designed for.
As a prosecutor, I learned that the system is set up to target and punish African-American men.
Why?
Well, when we see cops getting away with murdering unarmed black men. The system's working the way it's supposed to. Roland, I don't have to tell you, people are afraid of us. There's a lot of anxiety and of fear associated with black men. And so the system is set up to control us. We give cops these superpowers to arrest, to racially profile, and to use deadly force. It's all perfectly legal.
We saw this week, of course, Ray Densing in Cincinnati, of course, shot and killed Sam DeBose, unarmed, said his life was threatened. When if you actually watch that body cam video, when the car takes off, you can tell his life was not even remotely threatened by the whole situation. But two hung juries, he got off. Michael Slager got off, even though video shooting Walter Scott in the back. The Shelby in Tulsa got off. I mean, you see case after case after case.
Yeah, and the people who don't get off are African-American men who are disproportionately arrested and convicted for offenses. And I learned this the hard way when I was a prosecutor. I got arrested and prosecuted for a crime that I didn't commit. So my favorite chapter in Chokehold is a chapter for brothers, how you can beat your case like I beat mine. I was innocent. That wasn't the most important reason. Most important thing I did was get Michelle Roberts, best defense attorney in town, to defend me. Had lots of skills that I learned as a prosecutor that I used in my own case. So I want everybody to have this information because the system is set up against us.
But the problem here is that when you talk about that, folks don't have the resources, and what it also leads to are individuals who are forced to accept plea deals for crimes they did not commit.
So first of all, I get so many calls from folks who say, I have a public defender, oh my God. I talk in Chokehold about some cities where the best lawyer you can have is a public defender. Sometimes for certain kinds of cases, they're the people you need to go to.
Why?
Because they have the skills. You know, I used to work at this fancy law firm that actually Mike Tyson hired to defend himself in this rape charge. That wasn't a good fit for that firm.
Yeah, but first of all, the guy who defended him, wasn't he a tax attorney?
Oh, he was a white collar. Again, if I was in trouble for tax evasion, he's the first guy I would hire, but I would not hire him for a rape case. So the fact is, in certain cities, I list those cities in Chokehold, you're best off with a public defender.
Jameer.
So I'm curious, under Obama, there was a huge wave of bipartisan support to move the criminal justice system towards reform. What do you think can happen under a Jeff Sessions or under a Trump?
Absolutely nothing. Jeff Sessions wants to bring back the failed war on drugs. You talked earlier about he as endorsing this draconian policy where the federal government takes all of your property if they think you committed a crime and they never have to prove that you're guilty of it. So he loves stop and frisk like the president does. We know that these policies don't work. They don't keep us safe. All they do is target African-American men.
Ralph.
I think one of the biggest problems we have in this country right now are the for-profit prison systems.
Yep.
Because you have these prisons that are set up with guaranteed occupancy rates.
Public traded companies.
So if the state or the county or the city or whatever doesn't arrest enough people to maintain a 95% occupancy rate, that state, county, city has to then pay out of their own pockets that prison. And so I think if we were able to get away with this for-profit prison system, that would reduce the incentive to incarcerate people.
Absolutely right. So when we ask, well, why aren't the police doing better? Why are prosecutors still locking up so many people? It's because folks are making money from that. Mainly white folks, often men who live in these rural communities who get great jobs as prison guards, correctional officers, supervising African-American people.
But also, as Roland said, some of us are complicit because we own stock in those companies.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of black people who own stock in these prison companies.
There's a whole political economy. You know, one of the questions folks ask is, well, why do poor white people vote for Trump? That seems against their economic interests. Well, guess what? They get a lot of money out of this system, too, in part because it's 1.5 million African-American young men who are out of the system. So white folks don't have to compete with them for jobs. It's a whole political economy.
Mm-hmm. Folks, the book is called Chokehold, Policing Black Men, A Renegade Prosecutor's Radical Thoughts on How to Disrupt the System. Paul, we appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Roland.
Thanks a lot, folks. When we come back, R. Kelly might want to read this. He's once again facing accusations of a sexual nature, accused of holding women against their will, forcing them to ask permission for everything from showering to eating. Kelly has strongly denied the charges. Some also say it's fine if you are grown and if that's the kind of lifestyle you want to lead. We'll talk about that next. Also, we will hear from the stars of the movie Girls Trip opens this weekend. But they hear our conversation. News 1 Now, TV 1 back in 2 minutes.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Disturbing allegations this morning that singer R. Kelly is holding several women against their will in what their parents are calling an abusive cult. None of the supposed six women involved are underage, and police have filed no charges against Kelly. According to a BuzzFeed news story, parents of at least two women say they have been fighting to get their daughters away from Kelly. Several women who were once close to Kelly corroborated the family's claims, saying not only are females who are living in properties rented by Kelly in Chicago and suburban Atlanta subject to mental and physical abuse, they are also taped performing sex acts that Kelly then shows to his male friends.
You have to ask to be, you know, take a bath, permission to shower, to eat, permission to go from one room to the next. He really manipulates your mind because of who he is and his fame.
Kelly allegedly forces the women to turn and face the wall if other men are present, and if they break any of his rules, he punishes them physically and verbally. Now, police checked on Joycelyn Savage but found no evidence of a crime, but the 21-year-old's mother thinks her daughter is in trouble.
My daughter's severely brainwashed. She's brainwashed to the point where she says anything that he asks her to say, she's not the same.
But Savage tells TMZ she's fine, though she refused to say where she was or whether she could leave the location of her own free will.
I'm in a happy place with my life, and I'm not being brainwashed or anything like that. You know, it just came to a point where it definitely has gotten out of hand. So, you know, I just want everybody to know, my parents and everybody in the world, that I am totally fine. I'm happy where I'm at, and everything is okay with me.
In a statement, Kelly's attorney says Mr. Robert Kelly is both alarmed and disturbed at the recent revelations attributed to him. Mr. Kelly unequivocally denies such allegations and will work diligently and forcibly to pursue his accusers and clear his name. Joining us right now in studio, Dr. Jeff Menzies, president of the Association of Black Psychologists, D.C. Also joining us via Skype from Dallas is Yodit Tewelde, a criminal defense attorney and former prosecutor. And, of course, our panel here, we have Kim Klasick, Jameer Burley, Joel Payne. Start with you, Yodit, first. Okay, so here's the deal. Story was written. All the women older than 18, consent in one state is 16, consent in one state is 17. Police did welfare checks. Nothing there. What's the story?
So these parents of these alleged victims are using this word cult, and cult, being in a cult, isn't illegal. So, yes, they're of consenting age. Not an issue. However, just because they were not, or R. Kelly didn't commit a crime in kidnapping these individuals from the very beginning, that could very well be the case now. If he is keeping them and is controlling their movements through threats or force, then that is kidnapping.
But how do you prove it? How do you prove it? Because you got one of the women, she comes out and says, yo, I'm fine. So, I mean, obviously people are going after R. Kelly on social media. They're bringing up the trial where he was accused of having sex with underage girls. Now, he, of course, they said that was him in the video. It couldn't determine the age of the girl in the video. But, I mean, again, what's here?
It's all about evidence, and you don't have evidence if you don't have at least one cooperating alleged victim. So as of right now, even though I really don't believe that video of that individual, that young lady who was saying she was okay, totally was coerced, but right now the police have nothing. That's why there are no charges. That's why there's no investigation. There's no one that's coming forward and saying, this is what's happening to me. However, there is someone, that Asante McGee individual, who is corroborating what the parents are saying. Now, if she can bring something forward, if there can be some evidence that she can provide that was done to her by R. Kelly at an age that wasn't of a consenting age, then maybe possibly we can get something going. But as of right now, this may be a civil matter, but criminal-wise, there is no evidence. You have individuals who are willing to be where they are, and you can't do anything about that right now.
Jeff, you also have some of the folks who came forward to corroborate these allegations who were also involved in sexual relations with R. Kelly. I mean, this is a whole big mess.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's super messy. I mean, especially when you have somebody with a reputation that calls themselves the Pied Piper of R&B, hanging out in the chocolate factory. I mean, you get all of this stuff in his background that kind of says, yeah, this is likely to be taking place right now. But as the sister says, we don't have any evidence of anything. When you look at the video, of the young lady speaking about she's being okay, you can see somebody coaching her in the background. You can see a shadow on her, somebody telling her, you know, seeing those hands moving like this, like, don't answer that question, don't be direct about that point. And so there's definitely some type of coercion going on here, but there's nothing illegal at this point. Like you said, the age of consent in Illinois is 17, 16 in Georgia. All the youngest lady, I believe, is 18 at this point. I mean, if you think about R. Kelly's single with Aaliyah, age ain't nothing but a number. He's in the background on that album cover putting the earring in. You know, all of these subtle signs leading up to this point right here. It's like, he seems like he's doing what they're saying that he's doing, but again, there's no evidence for this.
Kim, Jameer, obviously, and Joel, you know, in the court of public opinion, R. Kelly is guilty, guilty, guilty. This has gotten lots of attention, but that's pretty much what it is, a lot of attention.
And I think it should get attention. I think while as mentioned by the attorney that there is currently no evidence to convict him or even to charge him of anything, that doesn't mean that we should throw it on, is water under the bridge. We should definitely pay attention to what's happening to these women, because oftentimes women don't come forward until very long after it happens or until they feel like there's a safe space. So I think we should definitely continue to keep our eyes open and be aware.
Yeah, I have to say, that video of that young lady saying that she was okay, that reminded me of a horror film. Mm. It was almost like a hostage situation. Like you said, there was somebody there coaching her the entire time. But if no one comes forward and there's no evidence, what can we do?
Our community has to confront this, and we've seen it time and again. Bill Cosby, right? We've got R. Kelly, Michael Jackson, there's Usher, there's some stuff now. We've got to figure out, how do we hold these people accountable who we celebrate and who we laud? And it's a difficult challenge for us because we respect the art and we understand the challenges of being a black man in that industry, but we also don't want to co-sign this type of terrible behavior.
But here's the question I have here, Doc, for you. Yeah. What are we holding accountable? That he's a freak?
You see?
I mean, no, seriously, because the issue here is, I've listened to the parents, I've listened to the women who came forward. Again, as your D said, there's nothing criminal. Right. So what are we holding accountable?
Exactly, and so that's the point. I think people's morals are being rocked. I think that if this is a part of his personal life, and let's say that there's no type of mental manipulation taking place, let's say these women aren't being brainwashed and inducted into some type of cult. Let's say that these are all consenting adults living a lifestyle that they're choosing to live. If we're taking that approach, it sounds like 50 Shades of Kelly to me.
But it's not, but this incident can't be looked at in a silo. It's talking about the entire context of who R. Kelly is and the things that we know that he has committed, things that he participated in. There are people who are saying that R. Kelly used to ride his car out in front of high schools in Chicago. Like, all of these things have to be
considered.
Physical
abuse is included in this story, too, right, where if women are speaking to other men, they're getting hit.
Yo, Dean, final comment here, 30 seconds.
So
but the problem still here is you don't have evidence. One victim coming forward. That's the issue.
And exactly. And as a former prosecutor, it was hard for me to prosecute cases of domestic violence, for example, if I didn't have a victim willing to say, this is what happened and this is what he did to me. So if these parents can have something, I know one of the parents said they were going to come out with some evidence. If they can show evidence, even of false imprisonment, the fact that he...
Right.
Is saying you can't leave until I say so is false imprisonment.
Got
and
it.
You don't have to show evidence of threats. And that would be an easy crime to prove.
Right. All right, folks, we appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll talk Girls Trip with the cast of the film next, News 1 on TV 1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, we've been telling you all week about Girls Trip. Well, this time I'm talking with the actual leads of the film, four best friends who go to Essence Festival. Here's my conversation with the cast. We're doing a second. We're trying to do an interview, but Queen Latifah is on Instagram right now. I'm sorry, but you know she's taking the black man's time. But go ahead.
Taking the black man's time. Roland Martin's black man's time.
What's happening?
What's goody?
All right. So a year ago, we were here at Essence, and you were ignorant last year.
I was not ignorant.
No, you were ignorant.
I had a blast.
No, you were ignorant.
No,
you were ignorant.
We had fun. Ignorance. We danced.
Yeah, we did dance. Yes. And
she
I saw some
character.
Of those moves in the movie.
Yeah, she was in character.
She was in character?
She was in character.
No, that's her. That's her. What's interesting about this film, you're shooting this at a real event, fictional. This watching it felt like I was watching a documentary.
Nice.
Because it's real.
Right. Yeah.
The folks who take Girls Trip.
Yep. Yeah. Percy.
And so for you, being able to be back here a year later, promoting it, but shooting it here, talk about that.
It's a blast. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was so exciting for us last year, but kind of challenging. We had to figure out how we gonna shoot in here. But I mean, we are who we are. This is our people. They gonna recognize us.
And black people do not care that it's a movie.
Oh, no.
Because we was like, hey, Queen Latifah. He's like, no, that's not her in the movie.
They don't know. Listen, no. We had like two good takes at that at the shots that we got before people noticed who we were. Enough. Third take, it was a wrap.
Yep.
You know, the cameras was out. Oh, it's Jada, Regina. You know, the shout out started coming. So we knew we had to get in there, hit it quick, and get up out of there. You know, God bless Malcolm for trying to figure out how to, the logistics of pulling it off while it's happening. But this year we get to like actually see some more shows and hopefully have a little more fun. It was hard for us being in here and not being able to just watch every single show.
Well, one of y'all were having a lot of fun last year.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we're talking about you. Yes, you. Yes, you were extra last year. Yeah, we have a video of you dancing.
Well, I had a blast. I mean, it was my first time at Essence. I'm with these ladies, and why not? And you was dancing. Why not dance with you?
Now, let's just be clear.
You was turned up.
I will always be dancing.
Yes,
I mean, I'm here the whole weekend. That's how we do it.
So
I like it. I like that attitude.
No, because Essence is just a whole different vibe here.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, we were at American Black Film Festival, and I got to deal with you. Had the nerve to cuss a brother out on my show because I wasn't there. I was stuck in an airport in D.C.
I apologize. I just want to say it was really sunny in Miami, so when they said it was weather,
American Airlines
and
lying,
it was just D.C. to Miami, it felt real false. And I was disappointed, just trying to let you know.
Well, don't stick y'all out. Will's my fraternity brother. I wasn't going to do that.
Okay. But you weren't there, and like I said, it was sunny.
Right.
And,
matter of fact, it cussed me out three times on my show. I mean, just three F bombs. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
That's right.
Yeah, appreciate that.
We wanted you there, that's all. It just meant I really wanted
you. That's
showing
love.
That was my love.
That's
love.
Like, cuss spoke out, just showing love.
Yes, that happens.
I'm gonna cuss out when we finish taping. Jada, well, I'm cracking up, of course, watching the film. I see you in other movies. I'm like, how homely can they make me?
She had those shoulders out.
Easy.
Yeah, I mean, that was a lot of fun.
And
let me tell you, what I wanted to wear and compared to what Mal would allow me to wear, because the outfits I actually chose were worse than that. And he was like, okay, JD, you just go on.
She did look at me one day and say, but it's kind of cute, right? And I was like...
like Little House on the Prairie?
Yeah, that one. Yo, she liked that
I thought
one.
It was cute.
And that's what made it extra funny, the way her voice goes up. It's so cute.
Yeah.
It's
adorable. I thought it was cute.
Now, you were operating in my field playing a journalist. And the whole celeb TMZ thing, mm-hmm. I mean, that's actually real for all of you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the average person really understands what that whole world is like.
Right. Well, it was kind of fun. I love being the one to get the inf. You know, like, yo, you see this? I'm okay, hotter. You know, it was kind of interesting being on that side of it where you get the info first. But then getting caught up in it, that wasn't a fun part. Mm. I can only imagine what it must be like for people who actually have friends who do that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, trying to figure out, okay, keep this private, mm-hmm. keep this, you know, it's tricky. Even
I've,
when I
I've
did
had to
the
be
sh-
there when you know certain stuff, and it's kind of like, well, we'll just leave that out.
Yeah.
It is tough.
It is, you know, because you want to... get the hot story, but at the same time, that line is so tricky, you know, and what are you willing to print and not willing to print, you know?
Speaking of lines, how many lines did you cross in terms of, did you just throw the script out and just let me just roll with it?
Pretty much.
No.
Really? So that was all written?
Everything that was written, and then I added some of me onto that.
Oh.
Yes.
A lot of her.
Right, that's what I, right. See,
I did what was written, and I just made it funnier. And that made the film.
Shade.
That made the
truth.
I want a writer's credit.
Last year, when Will and I were talking, he said, I'm telling you right now, he said, Roland, he said, when this movie comes out, people will see how crazy and talented she is.
Yep.
Crazy talented.
Crazy talented. I am mentally sane.
Yes.
I don't have a mental
crazy
problem.
Just crazy talented. Yeah.
So in making this, who was the one y'all had to say, I need you to bring it down?
I don't think anybody did.
Everybody was so in their character that it was nobody, because her character really was that. So it was never like, you know, and then her character was that, and then this one over here. So everybody
literally decided early. I was like, no, Sasha gonna gas Dina up when she starts coming.
Oh,
to
the And there's always a friend that does that.
She'd be like, no, come on, Tim, come on, come on, come on.
Yeah, you know.
I'm like, okay. You want to do it, and then you're like, why have you gone that far? Come on, you ain't have to do that, but you know you gassed her the whole time.
She was always gassed. You're going to make it
more. And I would be the one on screen that's like, Dina, calm down, but, you know.
Meanwhile,
the Jada. Jada was like,
kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
All right, y'all, hashtag HBCU Giving Day, our national call to action in support of raising funds for historically black colleges and universities. Today's university, St. Augustine's University in North Carolina, of course, established in 1867. The president, Dr. Everett Ward, an alpha man, our alpha general president. go to www.giving.st-aug.edu. All right, folks, birthday shout-outs. Philadelphia 76ers, Ben Simmons turns 21. They're still going to suck, Jameera. Former NBA player Ray Allen turns 42. Actor Omar Epps turns 44. He's a Cowboys fan. I really don't care because I hate the Cowboys. All right, y'all. I shall see y'all tomorrow. Appreciate it, Ralph, Kim, Jameer, Joel. Hi.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.